Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and because we're in a good mood because it's Friday, and just because there's enough good news out there, we've got two good martinis today, Jim. So in juxtaposition to our three crazy ones from Tuesday, I think the week has gone on an upswing here towards the end. Bobby Jindal announcing on Thursday that he is going to be pushing for the elimination of the state income and corporate income tax. Obviously, this would be a huge attraction for businesses. They'll probably look at tweaking the sales tax to compensate for that to some extent, which certainly goes more in the direction of the fair tax, which a lot of conservatives like. And Jim, just another reason among many to love Bobby Jindal.
It's worth noting this probably, and pretty directly, the Jindal folks are saying this openly, that look, some of this is spurred by the state of Texas. The state of Texas does not have an income tax. And that makes it a, you know, we've all heard about the exodus of jobs from California and how, I believe, since the recession formally ended, half the new jobs in the country have been created in Texas. If you want to credit Obama's stimulus, it really is kind of strange how Obama's stimulus seemed to focus so well on Texas to the exclusion of so many other states. There are some folks who will say, well, you know, you move towards a consumption tax, you increase the sales tax. Some are going to argue it's more regressive. Some people are going to argue that, you know, it's going to be a wash for a lot of taxpayers. I'm not quite so sure. The old argument is, you know, look, if you want less of something, tax it. Does the government want to take money when you're earning it? Don't we want people to earn money? Isn't that a good thing? Don't we want people, you know, why are we punishing that spending? Now, some might argue that, look, everybody's got to spend money. But if that seems like a more natural point to take the money, then, you know, and considering how the states get to take a, you know, a little bit of every single purchase at every, you know, everybody on the line, the grocery store in front of you, everybody in every store in the entire place, every ice cream cone, you know, pays a little something on every one of those transactions. And you look at that and you think, well, gee, that really should be able to fund the state. Louisiana has enjoyed its own little economic renaissance. And I think we're seeing, look, I don't think Bobby Jindal will ever say specifically that he has presidential ambitions, but he certainly is moving and talking like a man who wants to, who may have those and who wants to build a very bold record. One of the reasons he said he was not interested in being the running mate of John McCain back in 2008 and did not run for president in 2012 and was not really all that eager to be anyone's vice president in the 2012 cycles. He wanted to run. He wanted to have a major record of accomplishments in Louisiana. And I think clearly eliminating state income and corporate taxes would definitely count as one of those big dramatic changes that might, you know, be an interesting kind of argument to look at him as a tax reformer sometime down the road at the presidential level.
Absolutely right. He is building a phenomenal resume. If anyone wants to know what he did in his first term, look for Jim's National Review article on that. Of course, he's gone after education reform in a very pro-competition, free enterprise type of way down there as well. And so there's a lot to like. And Jim, if that's what you're doing to build a resume and people are talking about maybe you'll run for president as a result of that, all the better. If that's what you want to do with your time in office, this is a major record of accomplishment. There's a lot of people who can look to Bobby Jindal for a roadmap on what to do when you actually get the levers of power. He's done a phenomenal job.
Yeah, just one other point that kind of as we think, you know, this is because you and I will probably end up talking about 2016 in the future. Whenever you have some sort of rising star and they have something, you know, how do they set themselves up for a presidential bid? To me, it always kind of strikes me as, look, do stuff. Go out and enact changes and lead tough fights and be bold and do stuff, particularly if you're a governor, where you can say, look at what we're doing in my state. You know, every governor who runs for president runs on some variation of, look what I've done for my state. I can do that for the country if you put me in the White House. And, you know, whenever you get, particularly as we get closer to when, you know, the real, you know, jockeying for the presidential Republican presidential nomination will begin. Let's say it's probably going to be about mid-2015 or so. Well, look, any Republican who's even thinking about it right now, you got 2.5 years to do stuff, you know, and to do, you know, rack up significant accomplishments that'll make people say, hey, that might be the kind of guy or kind of gal we want to see in the White House. And to me, I'm always kind of struck by, you know, hiring people, positioning, lining up endorsements. Hey, look, you know, accomplishments go a lot further than any of these things in presidential campaigning.
Especially accomplishments along the conservative line like this. Very, very impressive. All right, on to good martini number two today. That's a pretty rare feat for us. But it's one that I don't think catches a ton of people by surprise. We kind of got an inkling of that a little bit after Election Day when longtime West Virginia Republican Congresswoman Shelley Moore Capito announced that she would be running for the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Jay Rockefeller. He's been there for almost five terms, and a lot of people thought that was a clue that Shelley Moore Capito didn't actually expect Jay Rockefeller to run for re-election after 30 years on the Hill. And turns out that speculation was correct. Rockefeller announcing today that he will not be running in 2014. And Jim, West Virginia is an interesting state. It's gone very Republican in the presidential race, but there's a lot of blue dog, or however you want to describe them, Democrats that are very different from national Democrats that still can do very well in the state. So while it's a good opportunity for Republicans, it's still going to be a pretty tough fight.
Let's say this is a martini that can be good for the right. I don't think it's quite necessarily clear. The advantages of incumbency would have you say, oh, good, it's an open seat Senate race. We have a better shot there. It's possible that will be the case. I think I've heard some folks make the argument that, particularly over the last 6 years, Rockefeller had drifted to the left to the point where he was a more standard issue liberal, kind of losing touch with his state. And so a Republican might have preferred to run against a Jay Rockefeller. Having said that, West Virginia is a state that I don't believe has, I'm trying to look back, if they've ever thrown out an incumbent, it's been a really long time ago. I know it has not happened for either of the two senators, Byrd, who was there for a long time, and then obviously Rockefeller. I'm trying to think back about their governor's races. Once in a while, you see them throw out an incumbent House member. Incumbency tends to count for a lot in West Virginia, so that's good. Now, it's worth noting, one Republican has already thrown her hat in the ring, Representative Shelley Moore Capito. A couple of groups, including the Club for Growth and Senate Conservatives Fund, are not really enthused about Capito at all. And they are looking for another candidate. In fact, Senate Conservatives Fund, which used to be headed up by Jim DeMint, now is saying, look, we want to find a true conservative to run for this seat. So we'll see what happens in that. So obviously, the potential for a divisive Republican primary out there, maybe the best choice is Capito. Maybe it's somebody else whose name we haven't heard yet. We shouldn't, you know, underestimate the resilient strength of the Democratic Party in this state, even when Barack Obama is losing the state by a wide margin. But this is one of those things where running up against an incumbent, it would have been a tough fight. And now there's an open seat race. And maybe if, you know, the Republicans have a chance to eke out a win here, or maybe they have a chance to, you know, make Democrats spend some money here.
Well, the NRSC and the National Republicans certainly strongly behind Capito. There had been some rumors that the other Republican congressman in the state, McKinley, who's been elected more recently and is more conservative, might throw his hat into the ring. But he has certainly given no official indication that he plans to do that. But now that Rockefeller's made his announcement, we'll probably see the intentions of a lot of different folks on both sides of the aisle be made clear here, and we'll have a better idea of how the race might shape up in 2014. On to the crazy martini for today now. And, Jim, I know you and I don't watch a ton of CNN, although we like to watch the debates on CNN so we can watch the little polls on people's instant reaction to things candidates say. So that was probably their highest ratings. But Piers Morgan, who doesn't get very good ratings either, has been on a one-man mission on the issue of guns, and he's brought on just about every conservative who's willing to come on his show, from Larry Pratt of Gun Owners of America to the infamous Alex Jones of InfoWars to last night it was Ben Shapiro of Breitbart.com, and they've obviously been defending the Second Amendment. And Piers Morgan just loves to point out that Sandy Hook, the movie theater shooting, and the Oregon Mall shooting were all by AR-15s, and so therefore that's the problem. They all need to go. And so he's trying to demonize as many people who are defending the Second Amendment as possible. The good news, of course, is that very few people are watching, and depending on who he has as his guest, they do a pretty good job of refuting him, as Shapiro did on Thursday.
This is why this is the bad and crazy martini. I actually think, you know, Ben Shapiro did a good job last night. I understand I didn't get a chance to see it, but I heard people saying, look, John Lott came across just fine, and the Marine who wrote that letter to Dianne Feinstein also did fine. So it's not like all of the guests are you know, being turned out as punching bags. I do kind of think that, you know, look, Piers Morgan has found his gimmick, which is to be really combative with his guests. He had a very interesting exchange with Jonah Goldberg probably about 6 months ago. The single most bothersome thing we've seen from Piers Morgan was the appearance by Alex Jones. Because, you know, and if there are any listeners of Alex Jones to the Three Martini Lunch, boy, do you have broad tastes, I must say. Alex Jones is a conspiracy theorist and comes up with, you know, wacky cockamamie theories all the time. He comes across as generally kind of unhinged and flying off the handle and you know, just simmering with rage. Of all the people in the entire world who support the Second Amendment of the United States, I think Alex Jones is perhaps the very last person I would put out as a spokesman for this argument. naturally, Piers Morgan gave him his biggest and largest spotlight as he could, because he knew if Alex Jones was going to go up there and be Alex Jones. We now have a circumstance in which, of all of the things that, you know, Piers Morgan has done, the Alex Jones one was the one that went viral because Jones came across as this, you know, frothing at the mouth lunatic. And that's exactly what Piers Morgan wants. You know, we'll see if he ever invites Ben Shapiro back. We'll see if he ever invites the Marine or John Lott back. We know what Piers Morgan wants to do. And we've all talked about, you know, the media will go to a Tea Party rally and try to find the one guy who's got a sign that sounds nuts, or the one guy who's making the comments in the ugliest and most sneering and most unattractive way. This is what we're seeing on a much larger scale on cable news. And Piers Morgan is pretty transparent about it, because why else would you put Alex Jones up there when you have a John Lott or somebody else like that? Alex Jones, you know what you're getting with Alex Jones. And naturally, that's what Piers Morgan wants. And the fascinating thing is that either Alex Jones either doesn't know or doesn't care that by going up there, he's generally hurting the causes he claims to believe in. You know, my sense is that if this, you know, if the fact that we're even talking about Piers Morgan, I don't know how the ratings for this week turned out, but my guess is because people were talking about Alex Jones, you will see, if not Alex Jones appearing again, Alex Jones-esque guests appearing again, so that, you know, Piers Morgan can, 9 p.m. on CNN as often as possible, try to make conservatives, try to make the right, try to make people who disagree with Piers Morgan look like the biggest lunatics they possibly can find. And you're left with that and you're thinking, like, what would happen if, you know, Fox News had given a spotlight to, well, I was going to say, what would happen if, you know, if they gave a spotlight to Al Sharpton, but I guess MSNBC beat the punch on that one. I'm trying to come up with the nuttiest lefty we can come up with. And I'm sure, you know, we could probably find somebody on Democrat Underground or one of those groups or something like that. But the idea, once you pick a paranoid conspiracy theorist as the representative of the opposition, it's clear you're having this debate in bad faith. And that's what, you know, Piers Morgan doesn't care about that. What's really kind of galling is that nobody else at CNN looks at what's going on here and says, okay, look, we can't let the 9 p.m. hour turn into Piers Morgan debating a lunatic. And that's, you know, that's what I fear we're going to get, because it works for the ratings for CNN. Even though it's, you know, bad for the right, I think you can generally say it's genuinely bad for public discourse in the United States.
Probably the petition to get him deported won't succeed, but there are other battles to win, and hopefully the battle to protect the Second Amendment will be that battle. Jim, have a fabulous weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.